We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
I mean, I actually think the change is exciting, and I think that it presents retailers with different opportunities to the ones that we've had before, because actually the growth of online and social media and all of these new marketing channels for us means we have even more opportunities to interact with customers differently and using different content and storytelling and video and other things that perhaps we historically haven't done. But it gives us new and interesting ways to present our product, to talk to customers in a more personalized way, and to really try and make the digital experience as inspiring as historically our store experience has been.
In January at NRF 2020, Retail's Big Show, we talked with Crate & Barrel CEO Neela Montgomery about her journey to retail and becoming the head of one of America's most popular home brands. And just a few weeks ago, Neela joined us for a virtual event as part of our NRF Retail Leadership Series. Today, we're going to bring you highlights from both of those conversations. Neela's path to retail leadership, how so much changed virtually overnight amid the pandemic, and what the future of retail will look like. So what you're going to hear next is our interview from January. Stay with us to hear how things have changed for Neela and Crate & Barrel since the pandemic.
But before we introduce Neela, let me introduce our co-host, Susan Retta. Hello, Susan.
Hi, Bill.
How are you?
I'm doing well and happy to be here.
Yeah,
I'm a Crate & Barrel fan.
Well, I am a Crate & Barrel fan as well.
Trying to keep the fangirling to a minimum.
All right, well, I'll cut you. I have no problems cutting you off if I need to.
Okay, all right.
Neela, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thank you for having me.
We're so glad that you're here.
Yeah, I'm so glad to be with two fans of the brand.
I think you probably have fans everywhere. Everybody knows Crate & Barrel. There's no doubt.
The black and white box is like, oh, yeah.
You know, you got some,
iconic.
It's something good. So, Neela, tell us a little bit about your journey to Crate & Barrel.
Sure. So, I've been at Crate & Barrel for about 2.5 years now. And before then, I worked for the Otto Group, which actually owns Crate & Barrel. It's a German privately owned, family held business that's about $12 billion in revenue across multiple countries, but primarily in retail and financial services. And I worked on their executive board, looking after their retail companies that were multi-channel, i.e. the ones that had stores, because Otto is predominantly a former catalog and now online retailer. And then before then, having been moved to Hamburg to do that role and join that board, spent 12 years of my career at Tesco, which is a large UK retailer. Yep. And in those 12 years, I probably had 10 different roles across merchandising, strategy, general management. But the last couple of roles that I had, I worked in Malaysia for 3.5 years as their merchant director or chief merchandising officer. And then I spent my last period in the UK running the non-food division.
That's fantastic. So you've been at Crate & Barrel now for 2 years as the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess that the interesting thing to me would be stepping into that role at this point in time when the industry is in such a status of change. I mean, change is happening so quickly. You get to know the brand, but I mean, what do you see for the future of Crate & Barrel?
Sure. I mean, I actually think the change is exciting. And I think that it presents retailers with different opportunities to the ones that we've had before, because actually the growth of online and social media and all of these new marketing channels for us means we have even more opportunities to interact with customers differently and using different content and storytelling and video and other things that perhaps we historically haven't done. But it gives us new and interesting ways to present our product, to talk to customers in a more personalized way, and to really try and make the digital experience as inspiring as historically our store experience has been. And so I think that presents lots of opportunities for retailers who are able to do that and do that in an inspiring way.
Right.
You have your design studio now. Mm-hmm. Is that something that came to be under your tutelage? Tell us a little bit about that, because I think that's blending digital and technology and all those pieces together.
That's right. I mean, one of the things that people say they love about our brand is not just the product or the store architecture, but it's our associates. And our associates are very knowledgeable about the product. And what we felt was, you know that if you visit a store, but one thing you may not realize is that they can actually help you with designing your rooms or helping you measure for a piece of furniture, or they'll go to your home and wait, help you set up on the day of the delivery. And so there's a lot of things that we just considered to be service in the past that we now have under our design studio. But there are new things that we do, such as 3D renderings of your space with our furniture and home furnishings in it, with suggestions for you. We have over 400 design experts across our stores. And last year, we did 15,000 design consultations.
Really?
Yeah. And 25% of those were in customers' homes. And that's an incredible privilege as a brand to be invited into someone's home to really build that relationship with a customer and develop that. I mean, yes, high touch, high value service. And I feel that for brands like ours, one of the ways we stay relevant is thinking about how we offer more of those services, because, you know, they generate brand loyalty for the long term.
So you've been in this position now for 2 years. Can you give us a thought, or have you thought about, you know, what are some of the most important learnings that you've had just in that short period of time as you've taken the reins of a fantastic, iconic company like Crate & Barrel?
Sure. I mean, one is to be respectful of your heritage, but not constrained by it. So I think what's incredibly important in a sort of heritage-loved brand is that you stay true to the DNA of who you are, but that you're prepared to change and evolve at pace, because the reality is customers are evolving at pace.
For
so,
sure.
You know, this holiday was a really interesting holiday for us because we took away our traditional TV spending and we invested heavily in social media and digital channels. And, you know, that was a big, bold move.
That is a big, bold move.
And actually, it paid off for us very well, but it could have gone horribly wrong as well.
Right.
But you've got to be prepared to go where the customer is moving and yet not compromise on the things that you're known for. And for us, at least, you know, we always say that design, quality, and service are the things that we really stand by. But even those, you know, design, at the moment, we have a whole new look to our website, very much designed for the Instagram generation, much bolder photography, much more driven by kind of dialed down promotional messaging, dialed up newness and product storytelling. All of those things are things that you have to be prepared to do to evolve and take the brand to a new and authentic place.
How many employees?
7,000.
7,000. So if you were to describe, if someone were to ask you, as I'm going to, the culture of working at Crate & Barrel, what would you describe it as?
Very warm and personal. I mean, one of the things that we've always been family held, whether it's from the founders originally and now by the German family. And so that leads to a kind of more personal, warm interaction with the brand, passionate for the brand and the product. I mean, we consider ourselves to be kind of global explorers. We go all around the world trying to find you the very best product that's made in an interesting way from artisans who've been doing it for generations. We don't just kind of design something and find the cheapest place to make it.
Right.
So that's really an important quality. So people who work at Crate tend to be very passionate, very warm and human, and increasingly, what we're now looking for is people who are prepared to push the boundaries. And that's the part that's probably changed the most, which is the pace of change has accelerated for everybody. And so just because we've been around for 58 years doesn't give us the right to be around for the next 58 years. So you have to create that sense of urgency and agility, even in a successful retailer, as we have been over the last few years. So it's really important, I think, to keep driving forward those changes.
You know, we have a lot of students that listen to this program. I was really surprised one time. I was told by one that it was required listening, and they got a quiz on it on Friday, which is really nice, I guess. I hope they're learning something, but I think that they are. What is the, somebody getting into this business today, whether it's in merchandising, just that wants to be in retail, has a passion and a love for it, what would your advice to them be?
When I started my career in retail, it was very much, you know, you could go down a couple of different routes. You could love product and become a buyer. You could be operational and run a store. Increasingly, what I would say is you really need to understand technology. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of my time on technology, actually. And if I were to go back in time, I probably would have studied engineering rather than English literature. But, you know, it's really interesting that as a retail CEO, you have to understand technology, I think, as well as product, and hopefully have a passion for both. Because right. obsessing about the digital experience is critical, and you won't succeed unless you do that. So that's one of the pieces of advice. The second I would say is to be curious, because what you cannot do is possibly know everything that's happening in our industry. And so I learn new things every day. I challenge myself to learn new things all the time and to talk to the best and reach out to experts. And I think that's very, very important these days, because the playbook that worked before is not the playbook that's going to work in the future. Correct. And so unless you're prepared to go out there and learn and keep learning throughout your career, I don't think you can succeed in retail in the same way as you used to be able to.
Very interesting. I'm going to talk to you about what's in your kitchen cabinets. Do you have a favorite dish? Do you have favorite brands? And do you completely change it over when you see something that's incredible? I'm so smitten by home goods and home furnishings that the desire to do that bites very often.
Oh,
so I have
I'm
to
glad
know if it's for you.
You keep us in business. That's great. I do. I mean, I wouldn't say as often as you might think, because I see so many beautiful things in my stores that I definitely have to restrain myself. But I certainly do change my dishes probably more often than the regular.
Now, that was our conversation with Neela at Retail's Big Show. But shortly after that, the coronavirus pandemic turned everything upside down. We've been sitting down with industry CEOs to discuss the current retail climate and the future of the industry in our new retail leadership series. And Neela joined us a few weeks ago for that event. Take a listen as Neela talks to NRF President and CEO Matthew Shea about what it's been like reopening stores and how Crate & Barrel is planning for the future amid the pandemic.
And so as you begin to reopen stores around the country, what are you seeing both from your teams, from different markets, from customer behavior? What can you share about what you've learned there and what you're experiencing now?
Yeah, and it is interesting. We're probably quite fresh. We've had stores open now for about 10 days, about 34 stores, and we'll have another few open this week. But we've had more for contactless and curbside. And what's been interesting is, firstly, we didn't furlough a large number of associates. So a number of our associates were delighted to get back into the stores and contribute. And that's been great to see the enthusiasm. The number of pictures I've seen of, you know, store teams returning with their masks on. And I'm proud to be back and excited to be back. So that's great. And then I guess there's the customer piece. And what's been interesting about the customer piece has been traffic is inevitably very much depressed, especially in the limited opening hours, probably minus 60% is what we've seen so far. But AOV and conversion has been very high, because I guess any customer that's walking into your store right now is probably on a mission to buy something and has an idea. They're not just browsing. So that's been interesting. And, you know, if you think about the trend in bricks and mortar retail over the last few years, it has been the trend of lower traffic and higher conversion and AOV and making every visit count. And I think we're just moving into an era where that's going to be even more exaggerated and even more important for us to really provide that excellent service and ensure that we are driving that conversion.
So in an environment like that, what can you learn in terms of sort of virtual marketing? You've already been doing that. I mean, we've all had to be doing, you know, your marketing has to be done virtually now. And in terms of engaging with customers, how are you thinking about being, I don't even know how you can do photo shoots and place product in front of, how is that happening mechanically, and how do you think about that in terms of the way things change in the future?
Yeah, I mean, we were already heavily investing our marketing in digital channels. So whether it's paid social, paid search, retargeting. And I think one of the reasons our e-commerce business has been so strong during this time is not just that customers are investing in their homes, specifically kitchen, because everyone's home to cook again. I think we sold more bread makers in 1 week in April than we did in the whole of 2019. So people are really reacquainting themselves with their kitchens. You know, kids are learning from home, so desks and kids' product. And then just we're seeing increasingly people are investing in outdoor spaces, and that's one of the things they want to be nice and they want it to be good for them. But one of the benefits, of course, of all of that e-commerce sales growth has come from the fact that digital marketing channels have reduced in cost. So cost per clicks have gone down, I assume because other industries are spending less in digital marketing. And so that is driving an enormous amount of traffic to our websites. But the creative challenge that poses is we need to produce much more content in all of those digital channels. So you need to be much more agile, much more fleet of foot. I think we used to have creative reviews once a week. Now we have them daily. And obviously you can't necessarily shoot a lot of new content, although we are using a lot more customer content, user-generated content than ever before in all of our marketing channels. And it's amazing how happy customers are to share with us their moments together at home. We have a campaign called Create Together, Seeing the Good at Staying in Home at Home. And customers are sharing everything from baking with their kids to, you know, adventures at home. And we're able to use a lot more of that content. It's actually made us a little less formal, I guess, and less aspirational as a brand, and a little more authentic in our communication. I think that's a good thing that will come out of all of it.
So, Neela, is there a way that, based on what you've seen so far in the way that you've been doing marketing, I know you're only at the early stages of getting some stores reopening and learning from that experience, but if you were going to sort of look out into the future, what kinds of things do you think might be more sticky, more permanent in terms of consumer behavior or the way in which you engage? Assuming that from a health and safety standpoint, we're able to get the rest of the economy reopened. And so leaving aside those kinds of things, but what kinds of things do you think over the longer term will be likely, you know, a permanent shift in behaviors?
Well, I think this blend of commerce and content, we had relaunched our CB2 website, for example, last year. And we had integrated there a lot more social media influencer content alongside our core selling. We'd used a lot more user content in that journey. And I think that trend will only accelerate. So we were already kind of doing it in parts of our communication. I think that's something that, based on this, where we had to do it because we didn't have photo studios open and our own content, I think we will move much more directly to that. So Leanne Ford is somebody we had a great collaboration with earlier this year. We needed to do a shoot of some new product, and effectively she did it in her home. She's a great kind of personal influencer. And, you know, typically we would have gone on set and we would have done that over days. And actually, you know, I think our expectations of what we need to do versus actually what works and what customers expect will shift permanently. And I think that will be a good thing. This slightly more authentic, slightly less stylized communication, beautiful though our communication is, I think it will challenge our assumptions around some of that, and that will be permanent. And then I think the digital behavior of customers will for sure be permanent. What we don't know is if, you know, 50% of our business moved online, you know, which has been peak volumes now for 6 weeks, how much of it is moving back into the stores as they reopen? Right. A lot, but not all. And what we don't know is, like, is it a 10% shift? Is it now we're going to be 60% online, 40% in the stores? Or is it 70-30? And I think that's something we don't know. But I think what we for sure know is it's not 50-50 anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's obviously got enormous implications for the... And this is not new news, but the real estate that's occupied by retailers. And that's a story that's been unfolding for many years now, but like so many other things, has really accelerated. And this experience of the last 10 or 12 weeks is going to maybe drive some acceleration in the way in which that plays itself out as you learn things. And you're already leaning well into it. So you're ahead of most of the rest of the market in many ways. So in terms of that kind of a world, then what kind of implications does that have for distribution centers, the kinds of protocols in a distribution center, or from a practical standpoint, or costs in terms of shipping costs and the way in which you do fulfillment? Can you talk about that part of the business a little bit and share any thoughts there?
Yes. And I mean, that obviously at the beginning of this crisis was quite a stressful area because we weren't, you know, eventually we got clarity that all distribution centers would be treated as essential, but there was a period of uncertainty. So thank you to organizations like NRF that lobbied pretty hard for that. And I will say, you know, we have lost quite a lot of capacity in our distribution centers in order to enforce social distancing and all of the protocols from the CDC. So I would say it's probably 10 to 15% of capacity. And so we're having to reconfigure layouts. And it will take us a little while to regain some of that capacity. And so now, of course, the question becomes, well, what does peak look like? Because, you know, we test our systems, we test our distribution centers, we hire lots of organizations, you know, like all retailers, we do a lot of planning for peak. And now we're going to have to plan for potentially a much bigger e-commerce peak than ever before. And so we will have to find additional capacity and we will have to figure out more automation. We were investing in those things anyway, but our timelines were probably looking kind of in the middle of next year, and we may hit that level of volume kind of this holiday.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. If you'd like to hear the full conversation from Neela's Retail Leadership Series event, check out nrf.com/leadership series. There, you'll also find recordings of other conversations with CEOs and register to attend for the next event. Remember, send us your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. And thanks for listening. During this pandemic, we'll sign off the new way. Stay safe, stay well. We'll see you next time.